things do. So I'm going to give a largely biological perspective, as you'd expect from someone who works for a biological sciences research council. I'm going to talk very briefly from a geological point of view about the history of biomass and carbon sequestration. Then we're going to have a look at the amount of land area that's reasonably available in the UK and the sort of yields we can reasonably expect to get, and sort of where current thinking is at the moment. A recognition that whatever you do, increasing the yield per hectare is a good thing to do, and it's pretty obvious as to why, and that should be a very important goal of any kind of research of this nature. And there is a number of science drivers that are going to make it easy for us to do that. I'll give a few examples of the sort of things that folk are doing, and then I will recognise that there's a potential win-win where you recognise the role of carbon sequestration and biofuel production as part of the same activity. So if you look over geological time, it was a time when the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, presently at pre-industrial 280, presently 385, was way higher than it presently is, 10 to 20 times probably, although there's some big confidence levels about that from isotope measurements. And first, it is removed from the atmosphere by trees in the Devonian, the laying down of coal in the Carboniferous, and then another lot is removed by the rise of flowering plants, angiosperms, in the Cretaceous. So historically, when the world was faced with a lot of CO2 in the atmosphere, the way it got solved was by sequestering it using plants. Clearly, the UK is relatively small, 1% of the world land area, roughly. And so you might say, what is it that we could contribute, given that we're only 1%? Of course, we're 100% of our own land area, so there is going to be a major contribution, which we'll see. But we are the leading nation in plant sciences, and therefore we can reasonably expect to wish to be in the driving seat, making it all happen, not only in the UK, but over the entire world. Sort of crops that people are talking about, first of all, waste, which was mentioned a little bit, but is actually going to be an extremely important source of carbon for converting into biofuels. There will be crops that have both edible and non-edible components, or are edible, but the sugar can be fermented in this way, sugar beet being an obvious UK example, and cereals, both the straw and the grains, as we've seen. And then we're looking at particular energy crops, which in the UK people mainly talk about short rotation, coppice willow, and energy grasses such as miscanthus, that we'll look at shortly. So, when people ask the question, how much land area can we reasonably do? And this slide is courtesy of Angela Clark and colleagues from Rothamsted Research. And the scientific reference is down there. There's about 10 million hectares in England as a whole, more of the entire UK. And you can look to see the sorts of yields you could reasonably get. Slightly hard to read here. Blue is 18 undried tonnes a hectare. And the yellow and the pale green are around 5. And when we start putting in constraints as to why you couldn't actually use all that land, because it's in cities or it's lakes and streams and other things like that, you lose a lump of land and you end up with about 8 million hectares. And then you add a second couple of constraints, which may or may not be usable in the long term, particularly national parks, areas of outstanding natural beauty and so forth. You lose quite a big lump of extra land and you're down to 5 million hectares. And then you say we're only going to use grade 3 and 4 agricultural land, you end up with about 3.1 million hectares. So that's the sort of number of hectares that people are talking about. And if you look around the country, just to look at this, the dark red says lots of good yields, and it goes down green to blue, yellow, lower yields by region. You can see that to a certain approximation, you get more of the nice big red ones in the eastern part of the country where arable crops are grown for food, and somewhat less in the less salubrious parts on the western part. clearly, important recognition that there is a significant variation in the yield, and therefore we can improve it. If there wasn't any variation, it would possibly be harder to improve. When you look at the amount of land area that we were talking about, the calculations in this paper show that about 350,000 hectares, or slightly over a tenth of the relatively agriculturally useless land area that is available, would be sufficient to meet transport fuel obligations. So the answer to the question of the meeting is the Is it viable in the UK? Is clearly yes, on some very reasonable conservative assumptions. And I've also put in here the point that the amount of land area used for non-food crops and things like forests in the UK is presently very small by comparison with Germany, 30%, Sweden, Denmark, 65%. So the use of a lot of land area for non-food crops in the UK is something that clearly has opportunities, and they're opportunities that have effectively been taken in other European countries already. There's been some discussion already, so I'll go through this quickly to the point as to why you would wish to, probably because of infrastructure reasons, to start with liquid transport fuels, whatever you may do in the longer term. And there are some issues which I weren't discussed about modifications of engines and what you can do and have to do for that. Biobutanol was mentioned. Clearly ethanol is the front runner at the moment, but from the point of view of carbon to hydrogen to oxygen ratio, it's not particularly good from a calorific point of view. And clearly there are other things, such as indeed making hydrocarbons from algae or other things, which is the way they were made the first time round in the geological era. I mentioned the yield per hectare, and obviously the first question is, where are we relative to the thermodynamic limits? And calculations have been done from the point of view of the photon energy in that the theoretical yields for so-called C3 metabolism, there's two kinds of photosynthesis, which I won't go into for those who aren't insiders and those who already know, which have varying degrees of efficiency, and between 5 and 7%. But most plants we grow in the real world are at about 1% efficiency from the photosynthetic point of view, and clearly the room for improving yield on that basis is very great indeed. We're nowhere near the thermodynamic limit. The light reactions have a high efficiency of photosynthetic efficiency. Almost all the losses, why it's not 7% but it's only 1%, are in the so-called dark reactions, so clearly we need to work on a number of areas. There is not one thing limiting. Lots of things limit, and lots of things have to be worked on simultaneously to improve the yield overall. Historically, again, there was a slide more or less showing this, we have improved our yield of grain between 1% and 3% a year, and that's an easily attainable target for biofuels as well, and the sort of thing we should be aiming at. Actually, I'm sure we can do much better for reasons I will mention on the next slide. First of all, the enormous variance that already exists, and in the regional slide, we were making calculations on the basis of 12.5 tons a hectare, and we're hoping to get something much closer to double that. What is the game-changing thing from the scientific point of view is genomics. You can now sequence in an infinitesimally small amount of time relative to history everything you wish to breed with, and thereby have a very good understanding of what it is that you're doing. And it utterly changes the game. The statistic there, in January 2009, the number of bits of amount of DNA that we knew the sequence of was 200,000 million bases, 60 human genomes approximately. That is the output of one machine in 1 week. And the Sanger Institute and the Beijing Genome Institute, another place like that, each have 100 of these machines. So it's a very big change indeed. Using this knowledge and working out what traits it is that we want to do is going to be very important. Sorry, I've now gone... is going to be very important, and there were discussions about cellulose and hemicellulose and lignin, and of course things are going to be important from the point of view of disease resistance and drought resistance and a whole bunch of other traits, all of which we need to work on as in addition to the very obvious one, increasing the biomass yields per hectare. These sorts of things are going on. There's a trial in Aberystwyth of one of the energy grasses showing the sort of things that are doing being done as part of the Beesbeck that was mentioned before, which is a virtual sustainable energy research institute with five universities and research institutes involved, that is funded both by BBSRC and a number of companies to the tune of about £26 million. And as mentioned before, and any systems biologist will tell you, you have to work on all parts of the whole thing in order to optimise the thing completely, not only the biomass growth, which is what's illustrated there, but the biomass composition. If you look at the amount of sugar you can get out of sugar cane, not that that's the UK crop, it's actually quite miserable at the moment compared with what it might be, and that statement is going to be true for all the cellulosic biomass fuels as well. Improving the composition from the point of view of processing and extractability is going to be very important. Enzymes were mentioned by James. That's the picture of the organism there is a marine wood borer, a gribble, which is part of this project which makes itself, unlike termites which use bacteria in their stomachs to grind away wood, these organisms make cellulases themselves, and there's some very interesting and exciting enzymology being done as part of this program to look to see how we can improve these enzymes. And I could write that for almost any enzyme for any purpose, we need to improve them to make them work better, and that's a big goal of industrial biotechnology as well. And of course we have to improve the fermentations, not only from the point of view of yield, which is almost stoichiometric for anaerobic processes, but from the point of view of rate and efficiency and extractability, temperature at which you do it, pulling the stuff out of solution if you're going to use ethanol. And then you end up with a fuel, and we have to, and this programme does, have a sustainability and life cycle analysis going all the way through it, as it should. This is just to make the point that although we're only discussing biofuels tonight, actually when the oil runs out, and before, because you can't use it for greenhouse gas reasons, and never mind, we needn't discuss the coal for the same reason, you've also got to use these kinds of processes to make everything else as well. So it's not just biofuels that we're really talking about, although that's the focus of this evening, it's everything else as well. And that in Europe is being put about as the knowledge-based bioeconomy, bringing together sustainable intensification of agriculture to make and fix your carbon, and then to use that for making all kinds of products for the chemicals industry, which Europe is the leading exponent. Finally, these crops are very good at sequestering carbon relative to other crops such as winter wheat and oilseed rape. Good things down there. And if you do the calculations in the world, there is 1,500 petagrams of soil of carbon in the soil, which is twice the amount of, that there is in the atmosphere. And clearly, sequestering carbon in the soil as part of biomass crops is going to be a very important part of the whole activity of this, which you get, as it were, for free on top of all the benefits of making the biomass itself. You can do the sums, and if you actually added 1% density of carbon in an extra metre of roots, you would, over all the croplands and grasslands of the world, remove over 100 parts per million of CO2 from the atmosphere, just like we did in historical time. A prize well worth seeking to achieve, and therefore, in my opinion, an important target of research in biology. And there's an existence proof. These plants do exist. The miserable-looking things are regular wheat here, being grown in the US, and these are so-called perennial wheat grasses, which is what used to live in the prairies when they hadn't been ploughed up to make maize. So there is an existence proof that we can make these plants if we are so minded. So the conclusions are that there is a significant role for biofuels in the UK. Current thinking is very much in that direction. We definitely need to spend a lot of our scientific energies improving yields and other traits, and I would stress the importance from my perspective of bringing together the carbon sequestration aspects of stuff in soil over in addition to improved ground biomass production. However, from the policy point of view, which is a focus of many of these foundation discussions, somehow we're going to have to get folk to plant these things, which will require some incentives and policies and possibly carbon credit payments. Most of the calculations so far assume we can do things without this, but I suspect that a little encouragement and lubrication will be necessary for Joe Farmer and Jane Farmer to make it happen. Thanks very much indeed.